2020. That's right. The Insane Asylum is going to the ear hole. It is 2020. This is Night 11 Dreads podcast. I am Otis B. Dreads. Of course, we have my partner in horror and true crime, SJ. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Welcome to the new year, everybody. This is going to be a decade of depravity here in the asylum.
Yeah, so nothing's changed since last year then.
Exactly.
So, yes, happy new year, happy new fears. And boy, do we have a good one to start the very first podcast of the Night 11 Dreads podcast of the new year. We're going to start it with a serial killer. That's right. Wanted to start off kind of sick and twisted, just to kind of match our personalities is basically all I'm going for there.
Right.
And I think we may do that.
Yes. Sick and twisted is a little too light for this guy that we're going to talk about.
It really is. It really is. So, let's just kick off episode 51. Let's give a shout out to some of NLD's Facebook fam. That's right, Gorehounds of Horror over there, Facebook. They have an open closed group. Check both of them out. Misfit Horror Fiend Club. That is another favorite of NLD here in the Insane Asylum. The Twilight Hour, whom we, before the holidays, we started giving them little shout-outs, and I think even during the holidays, and that is because one of the admins over there, and I'm going to give this girl a shout-out, Miss Amanda Thomas, has really helped draw some attention to NLD's Facebook page, and it has almost got us 400 likes. We are getting on the average 40 to 50 likes a week.
It's insane.
It is. And the Insane Asylum seems appropriate. So, right. I have to give a little special love for her and the Twilight Hour for doing these, sending out invites, getting people over there to our Facebook page. And of course, we got the Slaughterhouse. Slaughter on, Wayne.
Slaughter on, Garth.
Man, that was a pretty cool accent. What was that? Was that like a female, like old-time British type shit? What was that?
I was going for some German sounding of German sounding bullshit just to keep in line with our topic today.
Gotcha. Okay. Not bad. Not bad. Work on that, but not bad. And of course, Zombie Boob. We love the Zombie Boob, as always, here in the Insane Asylum, which is probably why we are here in an insane asylum, because we love Zombie Boob so much. And of course, our non-horror shout-out, but also very much a staple here in the Insane Asylum, Cannabis Arcade, for your adult humor and your talk and sharing your love for the sweet, sweet Mary motherfucking Jane. That's right. Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis is spelled with a K. I guess you can understand why, being on Facebook. And of course, as I mentioned, SJ and myself are over there on Facebook. Night 11 Dreads over there on Facebook. Check us out. Night11dreads.com. We are also on Stitcher. And so you can check all these podcasts out over there. And with that being said, we are talking a serial killer. And if you probably didn't, pick it up from SJ's really poor German accent, it is a German serial killer. But I have to preface this podcast about serial killers, because as I mentioned, we've gotten a lot of hopefully new ears on the podcast Given the fact that we've gotten a lot more, likes and people following us over on Facebook. So I just have to preface, when we talk about serial killers here in the insane asylum, we are not your just, number one go-to source. We are not the Wikipedia of serial killers, in a podcast form. We're going to give you you're going to have a pretty good understanding of, the serial killers that we cover here in this new year. I know a lot of the older listeners, the ones that have been following us over the past year, they already know this. But again, we are not Serial Killer 101. I am not Professor Otis, and this is not Professor SJ. But you are going to have a good understanding of these serial killers. What we do like to encourage is that you go and look into these people yourself, if that's your cup of tea, which you probably already know it is our cup of tea. So this kind of stuff intrigues us. You know what this reminds me of, though, sometimes talking about, serial killers? Because what's people, that? Does anybody ever, look at you and be like, you like serial killers? And give you that weird kind of, crazy look? Like, how can you like something like that? I mean, do they look at you as nuts, as you're as nuts as the serial killer you're talking about?
I do get that from time to time, and also just being a horror fan for life, I used to get picked on for being into this kind of stuff. I have a friend I'm still in touch with from high school that is just now coming around to true crime and kind of getting his feet wet in it. He admitted to me recently, like, man, I used to think you were a fucking weirdo for, being a Freddy fan. And, Jeffrey Dahmer was one of the cases that always, got my attention. Right. Going. So, but now recently he's like, I kind of get it now. The shit is super interesting, and he kind of fell down the rabbit hole. So,
and it's one of those things where, it's almost like the same kind of fascination people have with, let's say a lot of those old urban legends, like, you're going to end up in a tub of ice missing, an organ. It's kind of one of those things. I mean, that's intriguing, these urban legends and whatnot, which, they're always taking out a liver or,
kidney,
like,
or something like that.
Or something like that. And they just wake up. Can you imagine if you woke up in a tub of ice? And then this is for the guys out there. Now, I'm sorry. This just kind of popped into my head a little bit. Yeah, I don't know why. It's probably why I'm in the insane asylum. Guys may want to... All right, just listener beware if you're a male. But can you imagine? Because, again, you always hear the liver, the kidney, or something like that. Imagine you wake up and your nuts are gone. And you're laying in a tub of ice. Why did that come to my head? I have no fucking clue, dude. This is what 2020 has done to me so far. And we're only 5 days in.
Oh, I hate it when I wake up like that, man. God, empty gobbler sack down there.
Oh, my God. A fucking empty gobbler. You got a ballless gobbler there. I mean, what would you do? Honestly, I mean, you wake up in a tub of ice, you're drugged at some point, then you wake up and your gobbler's empty.
Oh, God, just kill me now.
That's horrible. It's horrible.
Horrible mental image.
It really is. And we got some more horrible mental images give you, and here's one. I'm going to give a quote from our topic of the night, a German serial killer, and I'm going to read this quote. This actually came out the year that this guy died. I don't know if it was right before that. We'll get into that. But here's the quote. Tell me, after my head is chopped off, will I still be able to hear, at least for a moment, the sound of my own blood gushing from the stump in my neck? That would be the pleasure to end all pleasures. So that, I think, is a good introduction to this sick and twisted motherfucker. That quote is 1931 by one Peter Curtin. Yeah, I see. I can't do. I tried to do the German thing there.
Peter Curtin.
Yeah, Curtin. The Curtin. That just, I don't know. That just sounds weird. Peter Curtin was 9+ murders, I think, that have been pretty much documented, at least most of them. He is said to have at least committed 9+ murders. Here's the astonishing thing. Attempted murder rate far exceeds his 9. 31+ attempted murders. He's not very good at this, is he?
No, he's like the best worst serial killer out there.
He is not by any means considered, you know, one of the most prolific serial killers, because we were talking earlier about this fuck, and it's you know, but he can be, I think it was you that said, SJ, that he can be put into one of the most prolific serial killers, given the nature and the murders and the violence that he perpetrated on his victims. That's pretty fair, right?
I think I would agree with that assessment.
All right. Well, this sick bastard was, he was born in 1883. We're going back a ways, Dreadheads. May 26th, to be exact. And he died.
A Gemini.
Yes. Oh, see, man, you're quick on that. I was never really good at, you know, I don't really know. I know I'm a Leo, but I just didn't know, you know, month wise. That's pretty on it. He died July 2nd, 1831. He was 48 years old, just a year older than your pal, your buddy Otis B. Dreads here. 48 years old. How did he die? He lost his head.
Yeah, and you can even go see it. You can check it out. It's in a fucking museum right now.
It really is. They split that fucker right down the middle and, like, opened his fucking head. Now it's sitting in a museum. So, yes, it was, they used the guillotine on this fuck. So, decapitation. Now, his, and this happened at Klingelputz. I'm not a German person.
You're a fucking Klingelputz.
You're a fucking Klingelputz. Klingelputz. Prison, Cologne, Germany. His last meal was Wiener Schnitzel, white potatoes, and white wine.
Delicious.
Yummy. And That was pretty much his demise, decapitation. So let's get into a little bit of how this sick, twisted fuck became to be. Or became to be? Came to be. I got all kinds of bees. All right, anyway, let's see. His father was said to be an alcoholic. I guess he made... I know. Go figure. Bad upbringing. You know, I think he was one of 13 fucking kids. I mean, there was, you know, some reports say there was 13 kids. Some say he was like, there may have been 12. Again, this is also, I guess I, you know, should preface this too, SJ, is this is one of those serial killers that, given the dates and how far, you know, how way back this was, there's not a whole lot on this guy, as you know, like there would be with a Ted Bundy, who is, you know, within, you know, 30, 40 years or something. There's not a whole lot out there. So, yeah, you know, You could just kind of have to go with it, okay? It could be 10, it could be 12, it could be 13 kids. Anyway, big fucking family.
Yeah, and when you have that many kids, one of them's bound to be a serial killer. It's just statistics, man.
Statistics, that's what it is, man. Now, I'm sure they didn't I'm surprised, actually, they didn't have more in that little... I mean, they got pretty much, you know, a baseball team and a bullpen at this point. So, huge family. They weren't very rich, or they weren't rich really at all. I think they, you know, kind of lived in like a one or two bedroom or one or two room house. So they weren't living in, you know, the life of luxury. And part of that, as I mentioned, the father would squander a lot of this money, sitting in the bars. And one thing that this is one of the big things that come out of his childhood that really sticks out. And this is probably, you can get a good understanding of how this guy became the nut job that, you know, the wackadoo that he ended up becoming. His father would literally take, and this was an abusive alcoholic, would beat the shit out of his mom. I mean, it was just a really horrible place. And then you got, like, again, 10 to 13 fucking kids in the house and, you know, one or two rooms. The father would gather all the fucking kids, this whole Brady Bunch, into one fucking room, okay? And then order the mother. You see how I got kind of soft there? This is a very important part. Order mama to disrobe, get naked, and have sex with the fucking kids.
Oh, Jesus. I'm glad we're recording this on a Sunday after I'm done with church.
So this is the kind of shit that he's being raised in, okay? You got an alcoholic father, he's beating the shit out of your mom, he's making your mom, you know, get all naked in her birthday suit, have all the kids here, have at it with mom. I mean, you came from there, it should be good to get back in there. I don't know what the fucking mental thought was there. That his dad is probably crazier than his fucking ass, which... Again, we'll explain how he got to this way. So let's skip ahead a little bit. That's just a little brief summary of the kind of, you know, fucking upbringing that he had.
Right.
It wasn't your traditional upbringing, especially, they don't do that shit in the South, do they?
Certain families.
Certain families.
Not
okay,
all of us, but, you know.
Okay, all right, right on. So, age 9. Let's skip ahead to age 9 of Peter Krug. Cutting.
Keep working on that.
Yeah, I'm trying. He goes swimming with some friends, and this was said to be, by his confession, his first murder. Okay. He's going swimming. One of his friends, he had pushed in to this lake. Now, the boy, I can't remember if they said that he wasn't, you know, really an avid swimmer, couldn't swim that good. He was struggling there. Another boy from their group jumped in to save this boy. Curtin, again, 9 years old, jumps in and drowns both them fuckers.
That's unbelievably sadistic for that fucking young man.
For that
you don't hear
young.
About that kind of shit too often, starting that early in that fucking way. And as far as I know, there were never any repercussions for that. Like,
you know, no, I did not come across any in my research about there being any percussions of that. Is that right? Repercussions. I said percussions. See what
right.
I did there?
A rim shot there.
But, okay, so, and we're talking, if we have to put a year on it, we're talking 1892 at this point, give or take, okay? 5 years later, in 1897, his dad goes to prison for 15 months. Now, I know this is going to come as a shocker, but can you guess what his dad went to prison for?
Let's see. Still in a candy bar. Oh, no, I know. Incest.
Man, you hit the nail right on the head. That's right. Incest with one of his daughters. Go fucking figure. Big shocker at this point, right?
Right.
I mean, we're breaking ground here in the insane asylum, I know. And so he gets out of prison, and it's said that he became like so much worse, if that was fucking possible. Becomes, you know, just really bad. He starts, you know, I mean, he's beating you know, Peter fucking just relentlessly, brutally. Beat him. At one point, it said he literally took a knife and threatened Peter's life. Now, again, we're going back, okay, 1897, so it's about 5 years. So, you know, he's a young kid. He's probably about, you know, 13, 14 years old, okay? He gets a girlfriend at about age 13. See, kind of keeping chronologically, man. This is pretty cool. This is kind of out of the realm of normal NLD podcasts.
Right, it is. Keep going. I'm intrigued.
He gets this girl, a girlfriend, at age 13. And he would always, you know, it said that she'd allow him to fondle her, touch her no-no spot. Rub the old boobies. But he could not. She wouldn't let him get any further than that.
Nope, nope. No home run.
No home run. You can get the third base. You hit triples all fucking day. But, man, you ain't knocking one out of the park with old girl here. Okay? This kind of bothers him because he's got a little pent up, you know, fucking frustration. I mean, he grew up probably fucking his mom. At this point, right?
So a little frustration there.
He's got some frustration going on. So what does he decide to do? Like any normal person would. Go fuck animals.
Oh, of course. It's the obvious logical next step.
I mean, come on. I mean, let's not think about doing the old knuckle shuffle on the piss pump, you know? Let's jump right in the boring. Fucking fluffy. Yeah. Right, boring. Yeah. I need to hear some squealing. So what does he do at this point? After, you know, he starts getting into fucking these animals, he makes a friend with a sadistic dog catcher.
You can't write this shit.
You can't make this shit up. Okay. And then begins, because his dog catcher, again, is somewhat of a sadist. Okay. And so they, together, little teamwork, start torturing and killing animals.
And yay! This keeps getting better and better, man.
Oh, and we're not even to his 20s yet. He starts realizing that this act of killing and seeing blood, he's getting excited. There's some tingling going down there in the nether regions. Underwear? That's where. Underwear.
Oh, jeez.
That's right. He starts getting, you know, fucking excited from killing. He is, not long after this, he's convicted of theft. And he's put into a prison, which happened to be only the first time of 17 prison sentences his life, okay? And he only did 1 month. Apparently it wasn't a, you know, big fucking theft. So let's jump ahead, okay, to 1899. Now, it said that he allegedly strangles an 18-year-old girl. Now, the reason I have to say allegedly, and there's not a whole lot on this particular case, is because any of the records on Peter Curtin, this particular one of them is not documented. There's no documentation to verify that he did. This was all by his mouth. Now, like we hear from, you know, a lot of serial killers, You know, they're into like dog, you know, animal abuse, whether I guess fucking a, you know, a dog or whatever animal, bestiality in general. I guess that would be kind of abusive to a dog. Guess it depends on what kind of dog you got. I don't know.
Yeah, it depends on the breed, right?
Depends on the breed. So, but what we see a lot with serial killers is that they also get into, you know, just destructive behavior in general. Arson, you know, they do, you know, robberies. They kind of have that little life of crime with some of them. There are some out there, yes, that do not go down that path as much as, you know, the next one. Well, this is not your guy. He gets into he's an arsonist. And what he would do is he would go set buildings on fire. Okay. And he would just sit back and watch the firefighters go in there. You know, he would take and you know, just he would just get excited, you know, knowing that, you know, watching these fires burn, the possibility of someone, you know, dying in something he caused, and then watching the firefighters go, and just a really weird kind of guy. In 1904, though, I guess his life was getting a little off track. He decided, well, he didn't decide, the government decided, he was drafted. The 98th Infantry Regime, and that didn't last long, because we also see, and isn't this strange, SJ, because Dahmer was also, this is, you know, one of the ones, as you mentioned, you know, it's one of the ones that, you know, you kind of, you know, paid a lot of attention to, did a lot of research on, that Dahmer, again, he was also in the service, right?
Yeah, he was. He was kind of a last-ditch effort on Dahmer's part to find some work or make himself useful. It was the last thing anybody could think of to kind of push him into. And it didn't turn out very well for him either.
It did like not. Her. Yeah, and we see a lot of that with serial killers, that, you know, we see a lot of times some military background, and a lot of times it turns out just like not very well, like you said with Dahmer, and it didn't turn out very well with this guy either. You know, he has a problem with authority, and he decided to desert, and that's a big no-no.
Yeah, you don't go doing that.
No. They don't look highly upon that. No. So he continues his life of crime. That being committing arson, robbery. There was a few attempted robberies. And he ends up getting busted. The military, they find out where he's at, whatever. They pretty much, I don't know if it was like a big chase type deal. All that said is that the military pretty much corners him. And he then admits to a few arsons. One, he was trying to, I don't know if it, what was it, like a brothel or something? Because he mentioned that, yeah, he burned this building to hopefully watch the tramps die. Which, right, was, yes, his like word, the tramp. So I'm assuming he's maybe like, you know, just where a bunch of prostitutes, you know, hung out, like a brothel or something. And this would, again, give him some kind of sexual gratification.
Yeah, this guy had a lot of weird kinks. And whenever he was indulging in these kinky thoughts or whatever, he tended to blow his load pretty early on. Like, he had a real problem with premature ejaculation.
He really did, man.
You know, it ended up saving lives in the grand scheme of things. In the
Who
end of the
would
story,
have ever thunk that?
Right. Yeah, the guy kind of goes off half-cocked.
I see what you did there, sir. Half-cocked. So he's caught by the military police. Of course, they're going to charge him with, you know, desertion. He does 8 years in a military prison in Munster. Not the Munsters. Anyway, it said that while he was in that prison, that he did quite a bit of time in the hole, the shoe, whatever you want to call it, due to a lot of insubordination. I would have never thunk that either.
No, I didn't see that coming.
I see what you did there. Because while he was there in this little isolation in the shoe, he would fantasize a lot about, you know, killing people. Or just death, period. People dying, especially in, like, mass numbers. That would always really get his engines a-running, you know. And he would jerk off thinking about this. About a lot of people dying at once. I'm sorry. When Pornhub becomes not your go-to and you have to think about, like, just, you know, mass murder to get you off, there may be a fucking problem.
Yeah, you might need to talk to Dr. Phil about that.
I wouldn't talk to him. Do we have Dr. Phil on the line? Dr. Phil, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Sounding like Hank Hill, like usual, but I don't know what to say about this crazy fucker. Just go ahead and chop his fucking head off. Fuck this guy.
Thank you, Dr. Phil. He is released in, no pun intended, in 1913. And once he gets out, he starts bragging about how he poisoned patients in the prison hospital. Now, I don't know if any of those were confirmed and documented. Again, this could have been one of his other, because he was kind of a narcissist too. You know, he loved to, you know, kind of bring that, you know, attention onto himself in, you know, just weird ways by admitting to possibly things that he did not do or possibly things that he did. Either way, he's bragging about it. Now, we're getting closer. We're about 18 years from when he really loses his head. May 25th, we're going to skip ahead, 1913, well, same year he was released, May 25th. That was his first documented murder. And this came, he was big into burglary. And things of that nature. And at that time, in a place called, like, I think it's pronounced Mannheim or something of that nature. It's a suburb of Cologne, which is where he did a lot of his growing up in Cologne, Germany. He was really big into burglary. So he runs upon this house, which at that time, a lot of like business owners, tavern owners, inn, you know, keepers, they would have their inn or whatnot, their business on the bottom floor, and they would a lot of times, you know, reside on the upper floors. And this happened to be one of those times. It was an inn or, you know, some sort of tavern. And he just, you know, picks this random place. He breaks in. He runs across. And again, this, it, you know, he said, it, you know, that in his words, it was the girl was right around 9 years old. Anyway, from 8 to 10 years old, young Christine Klein was sleeping, dreaming about running through fucking fields and playing ball and skipping rope and Zig Heils and whatever was going on through a little German girl's head while she's sleeping. Well, that all came to an abrupt end when Peter finds her. He starts strangling her. When she starts to come to, he sticks his hand over her mouth and slits her neck. And I think they said it, you know, he slit it twice. There is a link that I really, you have to remind me, SJ, to make sure I put in the description of this particular YouTube video, that because I think it's really well done. And the only reason I'm doing it is for some morbid reasons. And that's, you can see the actual autopsy photo. Not really yes. autopsy, but the crime scene photo. It is hard to take. Again, this girl was probably no more than 10 years old, sleeping peacefully in her bed. And here comes this fucking monster just breaking in and decides, hey, well, while I'm here, might as well kill the child. The fuck, yeah. Dude?
I can't believe that I actually made it onto YouTube. That crime scene photo that you're mentioning, man.
Yeah, I was a little surprised myself.
Yeah, but for them to show that, it's just fucking, I can't believe it's up there. But yeah, his first documented kill, he starts off with a kid, so real total piece of shit.
Right.
If you didn't already know, now you fucking know.
Now you know. Start off
with a 9-year-old girl and ejaculating. As he hears the blood dripping from her neck, like, you know, that's another thing about the fucking guy. I don't think it's the act of killing that got him off. I think it's the actual blood. The
sight of the blood. You know, they said that numerous times.
The sound of the blood. Yep. Like you said, with his one of his final quotes about wanting to hear the sound of his own blood gushing from the stump in his neck. Like, so that, yeah, it's the kind of guy we're talking about here.
And how fucking ironic and I guess fortunate for him, I'm assuming that he was later, you know, that was one of the crimes and murders that he was convicted of. But at that time, check the irony out in this one. The night before, Curtin decides to pay little Christine Klein a visit. That night, just hours possibly before this happens, her uncle, her father's, whose name is Peter Klein, his brother, Otto Klein, was at the house. There had been some sort of disagreement, some sort of argument. Otto Klein storms out the house saying something to the effect that, you know, I'm going to make you regret this or something really bad's going to happen, something to that nature. Okay. Right. And then, you know, exit stage left, Otto, enter Peter. Not Klein, not her dad, which is also, you know, odd because there was a handkerchief that was fucking found with the embroidered initials of PK.
Yeah, that is a crazy coincidence in the story. And you couldn't fault the authorities for putting two and two together.
Yes.
You know.
Otto, old Uncle Otto, was sentenced to X amount of years in prison. He was later released. But they said that he always kind of lived. Everybody always kind of, you know, looked at him like, you know, you killed your fucking niece. You're a fucking monster.
Yeah.
Type shit.
It's not the only person in this story that suffers the wrong what am I trying to go for there? It gets the bad rap.
The bad rap. Yes, he again attempted to do one of the same things that he did with Christine, because as you mentioned, man, this guy would literally, I mean, in a very literal sense, get off on blood. And again, not just the act, but you're right, it was just the sight of the blood. He tries the same thing again. He's getting them urges, you know, getting the old blue balls happening. And he tries it with a 17-year-old girl, and he breaks into her room. But unfortunately, this time, as I'm assuming with Christine, she was the only one in the room, Christine. Now, this girl that he attempts to do the same thing to was in a room that had other children in the room. So it wasn't as easy. He starts to strangle her. She's struggling. Some of the other kids wakes up. Pew! He's out.
Yep. Not the last time he'll do that.
No.
he tends to get freak out and run away like Shaggy and, you know, Scooby-Doo.
Whoa!
Ooh.
But yeah, so he does. He freaks the fuck out and he leaves. Now he starts getting a little like brutal. Apparently, them blue balls are really bothering him. Because sometime after that, he attacks a man and a woman with an axe. And it's said that, just like we just mentioned, just like you said a few minutes ago, he climaxes when he sees the sight of the blood.
Yeah, that's a hell of a fetish.
We say, you know, a foot fetish is weird to me because I think feet are the most disgusting fucking things on the face of the earth. Even more disgusting than a ballless gobbler, I'm just saying. And that's pretty fucking disgusting, you know, just an empty flab of gobbler. that's bad. But feet are even more disgusting. I can't imagine that. That is just, I don't know. We've established that this guy has got this, you know, fucking fetish with blood. Other people's blood that he helped extract from their body.
Yeah.
So he at one point in about 1921, he visits his sister. I think he lies to her a little bit, telling her that no, he wasn't in prison. He was off doing this or that or whatever. It sounded real, you know, legit and an adequate reason on why he wasn't in touch and this and that. His sister decides to play fucking Cupid and set him up with a woman by the name of Frau August, which later became Curtin. This fucking chick did not come with no baggage at all.
No.
She had a pretty sordid fucking past, to say the least. And her past includes of one incident where, she spent a little fucking time behind bars as well. She was, I think, a maid or a housekeeper or something of that nature. And she was also the mistress of the man of the house. And this guy apparently promised her that he would marry her once he got everything final and got his old lady out of the picture. And that did not happen. So she, in turn, shot him.
Problem solved.
Problem fucking solved. You won't marry me, I'm killing your fucking ass.
Right. As you do.
As you do. Again, one of those logical next step type deals.
Right.
And, this there's a reason that we had to bring that up, because this also comes back to haunt her. Now, when Peter's sister tries to, you know, hook them two up, he's kind of, you know, I wouldn't say, well, I guess like kind of forceful. He's really, you know, pushing it, like, hey, we should get married, blah blah blah. He's like being kind of like, you know. That kind of turns her off a little. So what does he do? He threatens to kill her if she didn't marry him. How ironic that old Frau's fucking past came back to fucking, you know, rear its ugly head again.
Oh yeah, karma's a bitch, man.
Karma's a bitch, and she gave in. And, you know, here's the weird thing. Just like we see with a lot of serial killers, they can hold those double lives.
Oh yeah, they're great at it.
And it said the next few years, 2-3 years after they got married, and it's kind of a shotgun wedding. Right. he was a model fucking husband.
What a good guy.
What a good fucking guy. I think he's getting one of those bad raps you were talking about.
I think so.
Poor fucking guy. And then again, poor guy. 1925, about 2 years or so after they marry, he loses his job and heads back to Dusseldorf. Here's where it gets kind of weird.
Oh, this is where it gets weird?
No, yeah, this is where it just starts to get fucking weird. Excuse me. He says that he had this, like, you know, vision or saw the skies over Dusseldorf. It was a blood red sky. And that was the same sky that Jack the Ripper saw in 1888. And that kind of, like, threw him into that. See what I did there?
Yes, I do. Good job.
Thank you. So, he goes back to Dusseldorf in about 1929, February the 3rd, to be exact. He stabs another Frau. Not his Frau, but Frau Kuhn with a pair of scissors. And this is where we start diving into how bad of a fucking serial killer this guy is.
Right.
He doesn't have a good success rate because he stabs his bitch with a pair of scissors and she survives.
Oops.
Oops. My bad. Can we still be friends?
Can I have a do-over on that? Go sharpen these scissors up a little bit.
And he does, as a matter of fact, sir. 5 days later, he sharpens the fucking scissors and decides to attack an 8-year-old again, little Rosa Olinger. He strangles her unconscious. This is where it really, really gets fucking weird. This is how sick and twisted this guy is, I think, and it all goes back. His sick and twisted mind all goes back to this one incident right here, in my mind. He strangles little Rosa unconscious. He then proceeds to stab her in the stomach, the temple, the genitals, and the heart. He nuts, then takes his fingers, takes his nut, his baby batter, and puts them inside little Rosa.
Oh, God, we just lost everybody right there.
Every listener that we ever had has probably just boycotted our podcast. Hey, we didn't do the shit, motherfuckers. We didn't right. do the shit. And then decides he's got to take her body some fucking where. So he takes her out in this brush. And I'm not sure if he left her there overnight or burned her that night. But at any rate, at one point, burns her body and nuts again. I mean, hey, ladies, this is a guy who can go all night.
Jeez, if you got the right stuff to turn him on, like being burned alive and slashed and shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if that's your thing, if that's what you're into, we got a match for you.
Go all night, yeah.
The day before Thanksgiving, February 13th, the same year, again, 5 days later. So he's doing them in 5-day increments. You know, the third was the failed scissor attack. Sharpens them 5 days later. Gets little Rosa. And then 5 days after that, on the 13th, here's where the jokes come in abundance. I'm assuming that he used scissors. And I really hope he did. And there's a really weird reason why I'm saying that. Because his next victim was 45-year-old Rudolf Scheer.
Oh, the irony continues to roll out in this episode.
It is absolutely amazing. Yes, Rudolf Shears was stabbed 20 fucking times in the head, the eyes, and the back. The very next day, it's how fucking crazy this guy is, which we do see with other serial killers, one being Edmund Kemper, goes back to the crime scene, okay, and talks to the cops. Now, Edmund Kemper, he never went back to any crime scenes, but he would always talk to the cops about it. And he said that, he heard about the crime scene through a telephone call. Interesting.
Yes.
It was right around this point that the papers start calling him the Dusseldorf Ripper. Now, there was a guy, I don't know if you have his name handy, but there was a mentally handicapped, mentally challenged young man that was arrested, I think, in connection with some of these murders, thinking, oh, we got the right guy. Do you have his name handy by chance?
That would be 21-year-old epileptic, actually. I think he was epileptic,
yes.
And maybe he had some mental issues other than that, but Hans Strausberg is what I have here.
Yes, that's it. I could not remember. But yeah, this kind of reminded me of a point in history with the burning of the Reichstag, Hitler's government building, and they framed a mentally naked man in an alley for that. So I guess it's just part of all Germans, you know, fucking thing there.
Injustice.
Right. Yeah. So we're about up to, you know, 1930. And this is, again, where things just keep getting weirder. They don't calm down at all. What can you tell us, SJ, about some of the shit that happened just about a year and a half or so up to him losing his head?
Oh, good God. There's so much, man. I was taking notes on that YouTube video that you mentioned earlier, and I got about probably 6 pages of just stuff that I jotted down, man.
Yeah.
After the epileptic guy, Strausberg, confesses, which, you know, he apparently didn't really know what he was confessing to, but
probably not. Yeah,
he goes away for a little while, committed to an insane asylum. Actually, not this one, but
not one this of them one
out there.
No,
for several years.
Unless they brought him in another door, I wasn't familiar with, but I haven't seen him in passing.
Right, and I guess our next victim is Maria Hahn. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. So this is just she was stabbed repeatedly in the chest and head in a nice meadow out there. And then randomly, let's see, he goes on kind of a random spree after that. He kills an 18-year-old girl, or attacks, I should say, an 18-year-old girl, a 30-year-old man, a 37-year-old woman, who all survived. And none of them could ID the perp. They all survived, and nobody could to give a good description of the guy, so... And that's another thing that runs throughout this whole case. There seems to be all these failed attempts at murder, and also a lot of people who have a really bad recollection of exactly what happened, what this guy looked like.
Nobody can give a good, you know, deposit.
He can give you a fucking deposit.
He'll give you a deposit.
Shove it right up in there for you. Good God Almighty. Thanks for the sound effect.
No worries. I'm my own soundboard.
And so then we have a really bizarre one that happens after this. We have 2 foster sisters that would be the next targets for this maniac.
I think this is the corner. Exactly. This is the cornerstone. Hate to cut you off there, but this is the cornerstone, I think. If this is the same also attempted murders, this is the cornerstone of how bad of a serial killer this guy is.
Yes. So the 2 foster sisters, they meet up with old Pete somewhere. I don't remember exactly how they met, but
old
I think they
Sneaky
met at
Pete.
A station or something. Sneaky Pete. Creepy Pete. So he gets in good with these 2 sisters, sends one of them out to get cigarettes. Like, here's some money. Go get me a pack of smokes. And so she runs off to get the cigarettes, leaving the other sister. I think the Louise is the one that went off to get the smokes, and her sister Gertrude is left behind with Pete, where he strangles her to unconsciousness and switches from scissors to a knife at this point. And it's not the last time he'll switch weapons on us.
Mm-mm.
He switches to a knife and slashes Gertrude's neck deeply. Here comes old Sis back with the pack of cigarettes. She gets stabbed in the chest, punctures her aorta, And this is where the vampire of Dusseldorf nickname kind of comes into play, because I think this is the first time that he drinks blood from one of his victims.
Yeah, yeah. One of the first murders that I heard that it was brought up that he did. Yeah, this is where the nickname. But this is not. I don't think the one that I was thinking of. I was thinking of the Hammer incident, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a whole other chapter of the story here. But I think those two sisters die, right? I don't have the who lived and who died all figured out here.
I'm pretty sure they did. And just to reiterate a little bit on that whole blood drinking vampire thing, they said that he drank so much it literally made him like physically ill. He was throwing up that he had drank so much of these little girls' blood.
Mm. Jesus Christ, yummy. I hope you finished your dinner already before this one.
Man.
You can imagine what that looks like. Mm. Drank so much human blood, and then to vomit up a belly full of human blood. This is the kind of shit you'll only hear in the insane asylum.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, you fucking sick bastards.
So what victim do we have next on the list? We'll just run down some of his final victims, and then we'll get to the crescendo.
Right.
The climax, all pun intended.
Next one, the climax. Oh, God. So the very next day after the Foster sisters are murdered, another Gertrude gets assaulted.
Well, every other woman in Germany is probably named Gertrude. I mean, that's fair.
That dirty Gertie gets it again.
Dirty Gertie.
So yeah, this is Gertrude Schult, I think. Yeah, I have here. So Pete asks her blatantly for sex. I think they met at a railway station or something like that.
Oh yeah. I remember this one. Yeah, this is good.
She says she'd rather die than have sex with him. So of course his response is, well, die then, which is a pretty fucking slasher, horror movie slasher thing to say.
That's like a one-liner you see in so many horror films. Oh, right. Is that what you'd rather do? Allow me to accommodate you.
And this is also probably just bullshit that he made up to make himself sound cool. Because, who knows whether he really said this shit or not.
But, I would have said that I said it.
Right. I'd fuck me.
I'd fuck me.
So, yeah, she gets stabbed in the head, neck, shoulder, and back.
My neck, my back.
My neck, my back, my pussy, and my crack.
Oh.
So we, some guys hear some screams. Pete does another Bugs Bunny exit stage, pew, right? Pew, just gone, as he tends to do when
or you hear the Flintstone feet, like, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. Yeah, we need that sound effect.
Oh, God, we did for this one.
So, you know, this Gertrude survives the attack after the guys, these random guys kind of scare Pete off.
I see what you did.
Again, she can't describe the guy. She can't fucking remember what he looked like or anything. And this
Peter Wiener Beater.
Yeah. But I don't think he ever like wore a mask or tried to conceal his identity, but for some reason, man, these people just can't get a good look at the guy. Because old Gertie survived.
All them German serial killers kind of look alike.
They all look alike, man. We got a couple more attempted murders, a couple more failures there on.
Speaking of attempted murders, it was between February and May of 1930. There were 10, yes, count them, 10 attacks with a fucking hammer, and every single one of them fucking survived.
Yeah, that's what happens when you switch from a knife to hammer.
You would think the hammer would be a little more efficient.
You'd think you'd have I mean, depending on you got two ends of the hammer. You got the hammer end and you got the claw end, man. It's a versatile killing weapon. How do you manage to fuck it up that many times?
Oh, he did.
That's our boy, old Pete. That's
old sneaky Pete. Peter Wiener Beater.
Yeah, there. I think the funniest part about the when we switch from knife to hammer in the story is the one where he somehow manages to break the handle of the fucking hammer in the attempt to
It was
kill
two girls in that one, right?
The fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that one.
There was apparently two girls, and he attacks them both with a hammer, and after he beats one and doesn't kill him, because that's Sneaky Pete's fucking MO there, he begins to beat on the second girl, breaks the fucking handle of a hammer. Now, you are hitting someone with a hammer. Now, I don't know if maybe the handle was, you know, just had been worn out. We don't know that. But still, you're hitting a human being with a fucking hammer, and the handle breaks, and both of them survive.
Good God almighty, this guy sucks at killing.
This is the worst serial killer. Yes, he's got 9+, but come on, people. You have to agree with, you know, me and SJ here. This guy's got to be one of the worst, yeah.
Yeah, just worst killer, worst human being.
But when he did it, he did it fucking over the top, like, doing it, like, the all up in the little girl and whatnot,
oh,
you
God.
Know. Yeah, I mean, when he did it, he did it, I guess, sick and twisted like we would imagine a serial killer to do it. But when he fucked up, it's like, who did you, Bean, that you compared Bean? Him to?
Who did I compare him to? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank now.
But anyway, yeah, it's like a Keystone Cop of serial killers, you know. Yeah. When he fucks up, he really fucks up. And then he just, again, just runs away with the, you know, the little, you know, Flintstone feet going, that little sound effect, and pew, he's off, man.
Yeah. And, so,
What was his absolute last attempt or victim? I can't remember if he actually killed the, if we already talked about him killing the last one, but I know, like, that there was either an attempt or an actual murder before his little reign came to an end.
Well, I think, at least if my notes are right, the last one, was another Gertrude, believe it or not. But this one, now,
go
this
figure,
is probably the youngest victim here. A 5-year-old German girl named Gertrude. He accosts her and takes her into a vacant lot somewhere, strangles her, stabs her in the temple, and then stabs her 34 more times.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess he switched back to a knife at this point. I'm not sure what the weapon
was. Well,
he
figured the hammer thing wasn't happening, and, you know, he didn't have an extra one. Yeah, he broke his fucking hammer, so he had to go back to the knife.
Good God. You know, a 5-year-old strangled, stabbed in the temple, and then 34 additional times.
And then, if I'm not mistaken, just left to pretty much rot.
Yes.
Like, out in an alley or some fucking where. I mean, just left to fucking rot. Cold-blooded.
Right.
Cold-blooded.
And that's the one that kind of made the whole case go, the 1930s equivalent of, or 20s equivalent of going viral. Like,
yes.
This kind of put it over the top and got all these crimes in the public, in the mind of the public, I guess. So the cops started to get the work on this case, and they're having a hard time because due to the you know, different methods of attack, the different weapons and all that, and the backgrounds of all these victims being, you know, dissimilar. He didn't have a type that he went after.
Mm-hmm.
Due to all that, you know, they're having a hard time figuring out who this guy could be.
He tried to mask it a few times. Now, I hope I'm saying this right, but I think he, you know, would put his baby batter up and to maybe make it look like he had sex with, you know, the girl.
Yeah,
but he said that he did to confuse. Yeah. But he claims to have never penetrated, which is weird because you would think, you know, you would think that he's gone this far.
Yeah. But that's never what he was after as far as, I mean, I think there are some rapes mentioned in some of these earlier, murders that we were talking about, and so
premature
there was definitely
beady.
That component. Yeah, but For the most part, he was into, like we said before, the blood and just the watching the authorities, that cat and mouse, watching a building burn. He would be able to just spontaneously ejaculate to all the mayhem and murder that he's causing. So, yeah.
He was kind of the original gore whore.
Yeah, yeah. But so when they start doing this, when they start doing this investigation, they get some crazy numbers here. They, the police, the local police, get about 13,000 letters claiming to know or, you know, have some kind of a suspect that they think might be involved. So 13,000 letters come into the police. They do about 9,000 interviews with suspects and witnesses. And here's the part that blows my mind a little bit, at least according to this documentary that we watched in preparation for this. 900,000 names end up on the list of suspects that the police are. 900,000 names. All right. Think about that for a second. What are you going to do with 900,000 fucking names on the suspect list?
And the thing maybe I heard it wrong. I thought they said 9,000, but
that's probably more accurate. It can't be 900,000.
Right. And I even thought when I heard, like I said, I thought I heard 9,000. When I heard that, I was like, good Lord, how are you going to go through all that? It's not like you have, you know, fucking computers. You don't have the technology we have. We're talking about like early 1900s, you know, 1930s and shit. They didn't have, obviously, the CSI type shit that we have now. So no. You've got 9,000 fucking people that you pretty much have to go through by hand.
Right.
It's unbelievable. But I mean, if I misheard it, Jesus, that's a...
Yeah, 900,000 can't be right, but yeah, that still 9,000 is, like you said, it's just
that's astronomical. That's an absurd task at that time.
I think with that amount of attention, and it must have been, you know, out there in the newspapers every day, everybody's talking about this this case. I'm sure that must have got, you know, to Curtin's ego a little bit, because he ends up writing a letter to I think it was a communist one of the newspapers. He ends up writing this letter and with a map showing where the body of Gertrude,
the five-year-old's
located, even though they had already found her body
the day before they received the letter, I believe.
I think so, yeah. So they get this this letter and they compare it to one that he had sent in an earlier confession letter for Hahn, I think it was that one that he was confessing to in the earlier letter.
Yes.
And they put, you know, the handwriting samples next to each other. Obviously, it's the same guy. So there goes their previous thought that there might be more than one killer. Now they realize, okay, it's the same guy doing all this stuff. And the 5-year-old Gertrude is the last confirmed kill. At least that's what I have here.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Maria Budlik. I have that name down. That's one that you hear a lot in the last part of this whole story, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. You already mentioned the 10 hammer attacks, but no kills.
What I thought was kind of funny, that after I think it was he was apprehended, that he states that, you know, the reason that he committed these just horrendous murders when he was successful, which wasn't a very, you know, high rate of success. Given how many attempts. He says that the reason behind all this was to get back at society.
Right.
Abuse
and everything.
Abuse for quote unquote repeated incarcerations. So it was society's fault as to why he was the way he is, because he kept committing crimes, which soon as I heard that, the one part in the movie Liar Liar popped into my head where he, you know, Jim Carrey, his character, he has to tell the truth at this point. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so's, his secretary's like, so-and-so's on the phone and they got like their, you know, third DUI. And he's like, stop breaking the law, asshole. That's what popped into my head. It's like, oh, repeated incarcerations. Well, there's a reason that you, okay, theft, you know, that, and it just.
Arson.
Arson. It just blew. Desertion. It just blew my fucking mind. It's like, damn you, society, making me a bad person. I have no control over my own life, you stupid, stupid face society.
How dare you hold me accountable?
Don't hold me accountable.
So, yeah, fucking weak ass motive.
It really was. It really was. So I think we've given the Dreadheads a good introduction to this guy. We'll just skip, you know, ahead. Yes, in 1931, he was rolled up to the guillotine. He was asked if he had any final words, and he said no. Although some of his last final words was the quote that I brought up in the beginning of our, you know, talk about this guy being, you know, if I hope that I can at least hear for a moment, you know, when my head's cut off, I want to be able to hear the blood, because that is what gave him his sexual gratification. Is definitely one of those sexual perversion type serial killer type motherfuckers.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, you thought Dahmer was into some weird shit, man. This
man,
it's right up there.
And I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna tell you what, SJ. I thought that this was a really good way to start the new year off. Back doing our normal. The holidays are over. We are back to fucking normal with NLD. And I thought that this was. I told you a couple of weeks ago. I was like, man, we should really start it all with somebody really sick and twisted. And I had a couple of ideas, and then I ran across this guy. And oh, I think this is our guy.
yeah.
And you know what? You know what I find? You know, before we say goodnight, you know what I find? I find that it is the it seems to be the early 1900s, late 1800s that you know, take and. They're the worst. Now I have the dog barking because somebody is beating on my window. Coming. Oh Jesus! Lord. So we're gonna cut it short here because I think that the white coats are coming. I want to thank you guys. Episode 51 in episode 51 in the bag. We'll be back next week. Thank you, SJ.
Thank you.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.